What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Final week of the Canucks season coming up here this week. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Drance. He covers the team for The Athletic as well. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. What's going on, Drance?
Not much, buddy. Thought it was a pretty good performance from the Canucks given the state of their lineup against a Minnesota Wild team given the state of theirs.
Sure. Whatever.
Yeah.
I thought the Masters was awesome yesterday.
Masters was real good. I'm really excited for the play-in.
Sure.
Play-in week. Yeah. You know that. It's one of my favorite. You know it's one of my favorite weeks of the year.
Of course.
I don't know, man. Let's get to off-season speculation stuff and open the whiteboard.
There is a shocking amount to get to today. By the way, Kevin Woodley will join us at 12:30. And the Canucks, yeah, they played over the weekend. They play again tonight. So let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, April 14th. And we'll do some quick headlines here. And really, the headline is, as I said off the top of the show, it's the final week of the Canucks season. They only have two games left. They play the Sharks tonight. As you mentioned, they lose 3-2 in overtime against a pretty desperate Wild team on Saturday. The other headline coming out of that game, no supplementary discipline for Yakov Trenin after he lands a pretty dirty punch on Derek Forbort on the ice after their tussle. So, look, I don't know how much we really need to get into tonight's game. I mean, there's some lineup stuff we can get into, some players making their debuts.
Yeah, we can sing Macklin Celebrini's praises for a bit.
I guess if you want to. I mean,
I do want to always.
Did you see that Gavin McKenna goal, by the way?
Yes, I did.
Oh,
yeah. I think with that goal, the Gavin McKenna hype has finally sort of rocketed out of Canucks talk world. Yes. and gone mainstream.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's like their big breakthrough album. His big breakthrough album. He's now, no longer just a hipster band.
One thing though, is I do think he's a winger, a pure winger.
Yeah, isn't that where he's like listed everywhere?
Yeah,
yeah.
So, but I don't think he's a winger who's going to at any point play center. My point.
I mean, if you're playing the wing in junior, you're probably not transitioning to center.
Also, if you're overthinking that guy because of position. Stop it.
Come on.
Yeah, yeah.
Get out of here.
Well, yeah. Get a new game to watch.
Yeah, wingers can be awesome too. That's fine.
Especially if they're Gavin McKenna.
Yes, my God. Especially if they're Gavin McKenna. But honestly, I mean, like, a part of me feels like we should just jump to the broadsheet and the lineup notes, but you had some thoughts about the game on Saturday, apparently, more so than me. Anything else you want to say?
I just think it's really important that we take stock of the state of the Canucks lineup in talking about wins and losses. You know, I saw...
Oh, yeah.
I made the joke that it was a microcosm in my postgame, or I made the joke that it was a microcosm of the Canucks season and that they, you know, didn't play badly, but ultimately lost, coughed up a third period lead and couldn't get it done in 3-on-3 overtime, which just feels familiar, especially when it happens on home ice. But the truth is that Vancouver's center depth at the moment is, I think, as bad as anything this franchise has iced in a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And when they put up a performance like that against the Wild, it shouldn't be like, oh, man, this team blew another third period lead. It should be like, wow, they hung tight against the Wild.
Yeah, and this is also, of course, the time of year where the stakes are wildly different for different teams. Now, not so much anymore because it's almost wrapped up, but like Minnesota really needed to win that game. Yes. They lost to Calgary the night before. They really, really needed to win that game. And so it was always like, it would have been shocking if they hadn't taken over that game in the back half. It would have been an incredible indictment of the Wild if they weren't able to do that, more so than what happened being an indictment of the Canucks, who, as you said, like just a shell of what we would have expected their team to be at this point of the season coming in to the year. So there's really only so much you can take from these games. Again, you know, Ty Mueller, that's great for him to get his NHL debut under his belt, and you want to see the continued progression from the young players. A couple of more players will make their NHL debuts tonight, which we'll get to in a second. But in terms of wins and losses and all that, I mean, I think we all know the score here. It doesn't really mean anything.
Do you know the Boston Bruins have gotten into the bottom five?
They sure have.
Did you know this?
I did.
I kind of like was looking at it and I was just like, really? They got into the top five.
They collapsed.
No. They decisively moved to secure a brighter future than what their current team was positioned to offer, both if they made the playoffs, if they just fell short, or if they hadn't taken the steps to deliberately weaken themselves significantly. They also gained a lot of information. There's going to be no wool in their eyes in terms of like, hey, you know, maybe Mittelstadt's fine as our second line center, or maybe Mason Lorray can step up and play a larger role for us on the top pair. Like they don't have to do that now. They did it in 5 weeks. Forget a tanking season. The Bruins executed an expert tank in 5 weeks. What an organization. Well done.
Yeah, gotta hand it to the Bruins.
I hate to do it, but I'm extremely jealous.
Yeah. Anyways, okay, let's go to the broadsheet here. Unless there's anything you want to say about Celebrini, quickly.
Oh,
I mean, he's awesome.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Great player. Yeah. Anyways, enjoy he'll be at Rogers Arena tonight.
Do you want? okay. I'll say this one last thing about Macklin Celebrini. The difference between the Blackhawks and the Sharks, I think the important thing to note here is not that the Blackhawks have no prospects, because, you know, Livshunov and Krejcinski and Rinzel, they're all defensemen, but whatever. It's that the upside of guys like Will Smith and Dickinson and on down the line, Eklund, is higher, and then they also have Macklin Celebrini, whose game's just a little bit more NHL ready, specifically because of his speed. Macklin Celebrini rocks. Looking forward to watching him tonight.
Yep, that's a bright spot in the matchup with the Sharks for sure. Okay, let's go to the broadsheet. So, all eyes, of course, right now on Tom Vilander, whose season ended, unfortunately.
I thought you were going to say Kirill Kudryavtsev.
Well, that too. We'll get to that in a second. But, of course, his Boston University team could not capture the national championship on Saturday, so tough blow for him and Canucks prospect Aiden Celebrini as well. But I think there was a pretty clear expectation among fans and media and everyone in the market here that once his season came to an end, there was a good chance that we would be coming in today talking about Tom Vilander having signed with the Vancouver Canucks. And, you know, whether it was to sneak in the final game of the season or go to Abbotsford or whatever the case is, I think I was certainly preparing for that to be the number one story coming into today. And instead, it's a lot of silence. And Rick Dhaliwal reporting, you know, Tom Vilander, he's back in Boston, right? The Frozen Four was in St. Louis. Instead of heading west and coming out and joining the Canucks or the Abbotsford Canucks, he's back in Boston. He's attending classes. Rick Dhaliwal also saying he got no reply from Vilander's advisor, Todd Diamond. You know when Dhaliwal is getting frozen out by the agents. That's tough stuff right there. So it's really pretty quiet on the Tom Vilander front right now. And look, there's still time to get this done, especially because of the Abbotsford Canucks option, right? It's not as if you have to get him into the lineup on Wednesday against Vegas. The AHL option exists, but you'd love to see, like we talked last week about, hey, let's start the off season with just getting some things out of the way in an orderly, quick, drama-free manner. Now, you could still do that. You could still qualify for that, but you would have loved to see it done ASAP. Over the weekend, get him into the organization, get him wherever you want him in the AHL or the NHL, and get things rolling for Tom Vilander, who you hope could be a big part of your team next year.
Yeah, and I can actually build on that. There's no progress. Like, there's no progress. No progress was made yesterday. No progress was made as of this morning. I did chat with some folks who are close to the situation who were able to apprise me of that. The relevant bit of hockey news that's non-Canucks news that needs to be factored in here is the Zeev Bjoum entry-level deal with the Minnesota Wild. So that deal, which starts right away, so he's going to get games either now or in the playoffs, and in fact has a games played bonus in that contract, in addition to a little sprinkling of some schedule, very rare Schedule B bonuses, if he wins the Conn Smythe. So it's like a token.
Yeah.
It's a token.
Can you imagine, though?
Yeah, I mean, that'd be sick.
That'd be awesome.
It'd be a token. It's a token little bit of Schedule B's, but really, he got max Schedule A's the next two seasons, which is really what matters. Schedule A's are the bonuses that teams should be very excited to pay if your player is good enough to hit them. I don't have like the CBA in front of me, but it's like top 10 for scoring at your position, top 10 for goals at your position. The only ones that are a little bit, you know, top five on or top four among defensemen on your team in ice time per game,
mm-hmm.
Or total ice time. There are some wonky ones, like the plus minus one. I know that a few years ago, one of those miserable Canucks seasons during the Benning era, the Canucks got hit with a full Schedule A bonus, so probably like 150 to 200K, because Brendan Gaunce was like minus two, and that was among the top 10 Canucks skaters.
Especially
because they traded a bunch of dudes at the deadline. So like he literally like teared up as a result of a trade, and then just like was... Nothing was happening when he was on the ice, but no one was scoring against the Canucks either. So you can backdoor into actually having to pay a bonus where you're like, oh, man. But for the most part, you are happy to cut these checks, right? When yeah. Quinn Hughes maxed out his Schedule A's, it was like, oh, yeah, let's go. We have Quinn Hughes. So for the most part, you know, these aren't that expensive. We're talking about 500K, 250 per bonus, you know, per season. They're bonuses you're typically happy to pay because it means the player is playing well, and I do believe that that's the issue here. The truth is that Volander is a defensive defenseman. Like, would you prefer to get a game and burn the first year off your ELC? Sure, but he's a defensive player. Like, he's not going to come in and play power play one. He's not going to mm-hmm. come in and be a 30-point rookie defenseman. You know, and then follow that up. You know, and put himself in a position as a result of a 15-goal rookie season to sign like an extension for mega money right away because he burned a year of his deal. Like, building up a resume, building trust, getting ice time, that's your route to being paid if you're a player in Volander's shoes. And if the AHL route helps, they'll do that. I still think there's a preference for him to turn pro. All of what I'm talking about can change in one phone call, but for whatever reason, it does seem like the Canucks just don't like structuring bonus or ELCs with sort of market rate bonuses. We've seen it with Lekkerimäki. We've seen it with a variety of other Canucks players. You hope that it doesn't hold them back from getting this one done quickly, but it sounds like there's not a lot of progress and not a lot of conversation going on to sort of whittle away at this one at the moment.
It's surprising. Really, it is, considering the importance of Volander and Lekkerimäki kind of as young, hopefully foundational pieces for this team. The only two first-round picks that this organization has made. The only two first-round picks that the team has made since the Vasilipod Kolzin draft in 2019, right? It's Lekkerimäki and Volander since 2019 are the only first-round picks that the Canucks have made.
Ouch.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's another topic. You would think there would be a desire to do whatever you can to make this transition smooth. And obviously it doesn't affect anything for this year, but it's about setting your team up for maximum success next season. Now,
but it could. Like, the truth is...
Well, it could mean something for the Calder Cup playoffs.
But also, it could mean something in terms of, I mean, you get this deal done quickly, and, you know, you've got him flying to California to meet, you know, the Abbotsford Canucks and get in a practice on like Thursday in the Coachella Valley. And, you know, you get multiple games before the Calder Cup playoffs.
It could mean something at the AHL level.
Yeah, but it means something for him.
Oh, it means something for sure.
It means something for the club, because if he's able to, you know, if you get an extra practice, does it help you play well in one of your two regular season appearances before the Calder Cup playoffs begin? Do those launch you into playing a big role in the Calder Cup playoffs? Does that playoff run extend for weeks and weeks as you gain confidence playing pro reps in North America for the first time in your career? And does that position you to have a good summer, come back hungry, and push to better make or contribute to the NHL team next fall? Like, it's all a continuum. It's all related.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting to me as well, because one of the things that's always stood out about Volander is how intentional and thoughtful he's been about his own development, right? Mm-hmm. As a European player coming over to play NCAA specifically, yep, because he felt it was best for his development. And you also wonder, you know, we've heard from Rick Dhaliwal, right? Hey, he's willing to stay in school for another year. There's the business side of things, right? Which is, he has leverage. His leverage is to go back to school if the team isn't making, isn't putting an enticing enough contract offer on the table. There's also the hockey side of things. And that's where you would think the two sides would be able to find common ground, right? Like, both sides, I would think, see that the best thing for his development is to leave college and join pro hockey. And so you hope that's enough common ground to grease the wheels to get a deal done here. And I do get, you know, and I think back to the trade deadline thing, right, where it's, well, we weren't just going to accept a second for Brock Besser because you don't want to establish the reputation as, hey, if we just lowball these guys, eventually they'll blink and they'll accept. And is there a similar thing here where you don't want to set the precedent that, well, we're desperate to get this guy signed, so we'll just do whatever. We'll give him the Schedule A bonuses. I get you have to manage that, but you also have to find a way to get deals done. You also have to find a way when it is a really important situation to do what's necessary, and you can't, maybe it sets a precedent, but you deal with that down the road if it means the best thing for one of your best prospects.
Well, also, we haven't seen this organization go out and sign any college free agents.
Nope.
You know, like,
which has been a staple in the past couple of years for this management
group. It was a declared staple, a key path that the organization identified as being central to their sort of accumulation strategy. One of the reasons this team didn't have to rebuild and could afford to trade draft picks was that they were going to have this pipeline of college players coming through. I mean, Max Sasson, I guess, is a product of that.
Mm-hmm.
Cole McCord. Anyone you're counting
super
on?
Super excited about?
Or
no.
Anyone you're even counting on to, like, make this team next year?
No.
And so, I don't know, it doesn't seem, like, it doesn't make sense to me, Jamie, to be totally honest with you. It doesn't make sense to me. The Bjum deal, he's a year younger, and obviously he was a Hobey Baker Award winner who had a huge amount of scoring production over his time in college, but he's also undersized, left-handed, drafted one pick after Tom Volander a year afterwards, right? So 1 year after, one pick later. That's market rate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, at the end of the day, there are reasons to be like, well, Bjum had the production and the individual hardware, and there's reasons to be like, yeah, and Tom Volander's the bigger bodied player who looks more NHL ready, who's right handed.
Yeah.
Like, they're both guys who competed at the top senior level. They have the same pedigree. So the market rate's basically established. Yeah, this should be a paint by numbers exercise.
At a certain point, there's only so much to gain by really digging in your heels and haggling over market rate. And I don't know exactly what they're hoping to get.
Especially
here.
When you're talking bonuses. Like, this team's not even an LTI. You know, it's not even like It's not even like those bonuses are something you're like worried about as cap rollover or incurring a cap penalty on the way they did with Hughes and Pettersson in previous seasons. Like, there's no reason not to do this.
Other note in the broadsheet, of course, on Rick Tocchet and Elliot Friedman reporting on Saturday and then again on the 32 Thoughts podcast today that not saying which way it's going, a decision on Rick Tocchet, but that a decision on Tocchet's future with the Canucks, he expects it to happen soon, one way or another. Could it be the end of this week, potentially? And I know Sat was on with Halford and Brough, and they asked him, like, hey, could we hear at the year-end media availability at the end of this week? And Sat kind of said, yeah, maybe that could be a possibility, maybe next week as well. But based on Elliot Friedman's reporting, you know, neither side has any interest in this kind of hanging over the summer. So expect a resolution relatively quickly here, one way or another. We can possibly talk more about the Rick Tocchet dynamic a little bit later on in the show, but there's a bunch of stuff to get to in the lineup notes. So we'll just put a pin in the Tocchet conversation for now as we move on to the lineup notes. And I mean, where do we begin? Because with all the injury news, the recalls, all of that. So let's start with some of the stuff from today. Defensive prospect Kirill Kurgiavsev recalled under emergency conditions. He will play tonight. So, of course, with Derek Forbort, this is another part of the lineup notes. He's out for the season with a broken orbital bone. Tyler Myers, who's been out of the lineup, sounds like they're not going to rush him back into play these meaningless games, opens up a spot, and we'll see Kirill Kurgiavsev make his NHL debut tonight. We will also see goaltender Nikita Tolopilo make his NHL debut tonight, in part because Thatcher Demko shut down for the season due to illness, which has struck some people, including myself, as a little odd.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I can't remember seeing it.
We'll hear from Rick Tocchet later, and he basically said, well, you know, with Demko, why risk it in these two games? And that's true.
Why risk what?
Playing him.
But he's sick.
But my point is why risk it applies even if he's not sick?
No, but
you know what I mean?
How would it apply if he is? That's what I don't understand.
I think it's like, even if he got better over the week, because he missed Saturday, right?
Right.
So let's say he's better as of today.
Okay.
But it's like, well, okay, you missed Saturday, but what's the point? Whatever. Just why risk it? Why risk it playing in these two games? But it was like that would be true whether or not he had ever been sick. That's my thing. You know what
I
mean?
I've just never heard of it. And anytime something goes down that doesn't match my expectations, I'm always going to tell our audience about it. Like when JT Miller took the personal leave and it wasn't to enter the player assistance program, I flagged that as something that suggested to me that there was more to the story, right? And there was. And at the time, of course, anyone who was sort of questioning it, right? Like there was a lot of pushback.
It was a weird time.
It was a weird time about like respecting, you know, on and on. When those moments happen, I'm just going to flag them, whether I know the full details or not, and be as transparent as possible. But what I do know, I don't know any, I have no reason to look askance at this, but I can't remember a guy being shut down for the season in the last week or being shut down for a week with the flu. Usually when guys get the flu midseason, it's like, yeah, he's ill. We'll see, like day to day. And you kind of, I've never seen someone be declared as like having a week long timeline with the flu or with an illness. That's a new one for me.
Yeah, and again, we can parse through some of Tockett's words later on in the show when we play his audio from today, but the quote from him today that stood out was, why risk it? And again, is that directly related to the illness, or was it just the case, well, he missed a practice and a game with illness, and now, because the games are meaningless, we're not going to force him back in? Who knows? Anyway,
I find that even more confusing, to be honest with you.
That's the update we have on Thatcher Demko. Of course, Elias Pettersson also officially shut down. As I mentioned, Tyler Myers unlikely to play again this year. Rare positive news on this front. Philip Hedl participated in practice yesterday in a non-contact jersey and was also at the morning skate today, which was an optional morning skate, but again, in a non-contact. And that's just really positive. Obviously, he's not going to play again this year, but I think not just being able to go to one practice, but doing on-ice activities with the team in back-to-back days, right? Because that's part of the return-to-play protocol around a concussion is, you know, get the heart rate up, see how you respond, see if you have symptoms. The fact that he's back on the ice today after skating with the team yesterday, really good sign and a hopeful sign for Philip Hedl going into the summer.
He was still in non-contact today, though?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's,
I would expect him just to be non-contact for the rest of the year.
Well,
you know what I mean?
You can't graduate through the program that way, though. At some point, you need
to... So how does that interact with the... But, like, can he... If he comes back in training camp, you know what I mean? Do you just pick up
No. You'll find a way to mimic a practice-like situation. But
over the summer.
I think it would be ideal. Like, ideally for him, you get cleared before you go.
Right.
You get cleared before you go, and you have a fully healthy summer. So that would require, you know, one morning skate or one practice
where
he's
a full participant,
and then symptom-free the next day, at which point you're through the program.
All right. Well, that's something to keep an eye on, right? He'll have a couple of opportunities here.
And that is something I'm keeping an eye on with that lens, right?
Yep.
Not because I think he'll try to return. He obviously shouldn't. But because it would be ideal to get fully cleared and then go off for the summer completely unencumbered by what he's dealt with over the past month.
That would be massive for Philip Hedl. Absolutely massive. And just for the Canucks to have any sort of degree of certainty that he's going to be healthy coming into training camp. Quick standings update. Canucks are 4 points back of Calgary. Now, they could, I believe, still theoretically catch them if they win both of their remaining games in regulation and Calgary goes kind of 0-for here in terms of points. Probably not going to happen. They're a 1 point up on Utah. All three of those teams have played 80 games, so two remaining. So overwhelmingly likely that the Canucks will be picking 14th or 15th in the NHL draft, or at least they will be given that selection, whether or not they make it. That remains to be seen. Anything you want to hit on the gambling update for us here to wrap up the whiteboard, Drance?
Save your money.
It's good advice. It's always good advice.
Yeah, save your money for the playoffs.
I was going to be like, put it in a mutual fund. And I was like, maybe you don't want to do that either.
Keep it in cash under your mattress.
Buy the dip.
Buy the dip. My goodness.
What could possibly go wrong?
The only dip I'm buying is that good queso from Costco. Fair enough. Over under tonight is set at 6. I like the over. If you're looking around the league right now, there's a lot of carnival scores.
Yep.
Game in, game out. I feel like
Quinn Hughes is looking for a Canucks record. Nikita Tolopilo starting. The Sharks are involved. That's always a good sign for the over.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. Breaking the record. Look, it'll be cool.
Yeah. Of course it will.
Yeah.
No, you'd wish it happened in better circumstances, but it'll still be cool. Still be a big moment.
Canucks are -330 favorites at home against the Sharks. The Sharks are real bad. +265.
Oh. Nikita Tolopilo, overwhelming favorite in his debut NHL game tonight at Rogers Arena. That's the whiteboard. We can talk a little Tolopilo, lots of other stuff happening as well to get into with our next guest.
Just one more gambling update.
Okay.
The Colorado Avalanche plus 900 to win the Stanley Cup.
Let's go.
I still think that's your best value on the board. They have the same odds as the Winnipeg Jets and the Edmonton Oilers. And I think that's mostly because the market still thinks that they're facing a really good Dallas Stars team.
The same odds as the Oilers. That's wild.
Yeah, worse odds than Vegas and Dallas.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, the value is there. The Colorado Avalanche surely should be viewed as the best team in the West, in my mind. So that's a market inefficiency worth considering exploiting. How about this? Okay, Panthers are the favorite, plus 575. I don't quibble with that. But Avalanche, you can get it 9-1, 10-1 for the Capitals, Leafs, and 11-1 for the Hurricanes. Like, the Colorado Avalanche, screaming by. Screaming by.
All right, that is the whiteboard for today. Kevin Woodley next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.